to you.
Okay, thank you. All right, so this is the Thursday.
Yeah, well, we can, Dunn, because Mr. Wallace wants to get out of here.
Mm-hmm. Just suggested that we be official today.
Okay, good. So, Mr. Benedict, we got a quorum. We're missing Mr. Costello, it looks like. But the rest of us are here. And let me open the floor to public comment. Is there anyone from the public, and I only see one out there, who wishes to make a comment on anything that's not on the agenda? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close public comment. And how about the meeting minutes of May 21st, 2009? Has everyone had a chance to take a look at those?
And, move approval.
I have, and I'd like to make a motion that we approve the minutes.
Second.
Okay, motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
I'll abstain because I wasn't here, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so we got the minutes out of the way, and Mr. Runnels abstained, and it was unanimous otherwise for those present. And who's giving the operations report, Mr. Benedict? Are you doing that tonight?
I will be doing that tonight.
And do you need a moment to collect your thoughts?
Yes, probably longer than that, but that'll be as much as I probably will do. So.
All right, we'll just wait a minute for the for Mr. Benedict to collect his thoughts regarding the operations report.
You guys have been busy. Yeah, we have been. Seems like the water table's holding pretty much about the same in Rio Grande Valley so far.
On your wells?
Yeah. Well, it's down, you know, but I mean, it hasn't sagged trough. Well, as long as we got the stream coming down.
Creek's
dry down here.
Yeah. 22nd Street on?
From about the fruit stand on, it's dry.
Are you ready, Mr. Benedict?
Yes, I am. Do I need to turn this on? It's on. Okay. All right. Thank you. Yes, Mr. Gehring, briefly, the storage and specifics regarding the Lopez Lake Reservoir. Current storage is approximately 55%. The plant production is about 4 million gallons per day. The state water delivery is about 2.1 million gallons per day, totaling 6.1 million gallons per day delivered through the distribution system. The downstream releases were increased earlier this week from 3.5 to 4 million. Operations report included in your packet. The Lopez releases are totaled there for the month. And I thought this had the total summary for last year, but it doesn't on it. But anyway, the current release is May is the first month of the water year for Lopez Water. And so you will see on line item 15, this would be on attachment 3-1 of your packet, this month's releases, May's releases was 336.59 acre feet the year to date, which would include April and May, is 660 plus acre feet. So it was tabulated on the operations report that you get with the packet every other month. That's the end of my operations report.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Benedict. So I did have a question. It may not relate to this item, but at the last meeting, Mr. Wallace asked for projections on total releases per year for several years, I think. Where are we on that, and when can we expect that?
Well, the projections, I remember we had discussed this. I guess I could give you a projection based on what we've done in the past. I didn't make a projection because it depends on what the release adjustments are that we make. And that could be a probability analysis, which probably wouldn't do anybody any good. It'd probably be more helpful for you to give you a release total from the last 5 or 10 years if you wanted to use that. What is your pleasure?
Yeah, Mr. Wallace.
I think part of that question, Dean, went to the issue of the safe yield, and are we exceeding the safe yield, and what are the projections for exceeding the safe yield, and what kind of a long-term impact that might have on the reservoir operations with respect to M&I uses?
Well, we have been exceeding the safe yield numerically, which is the 4,200 acre feet environmental and the 4,530 acre feet for contracts, both in delivery of the contract water and approximately 200 to 300 acre foot of environmental release water. Ability of reaching, of maintaining safe yield was based on how much the safe yield, based on how much we were actually delivering or releasing. And that analysis, which was done by Montgomery Watson, and probably a couple of you, several of you may remember it, but it at the current rate that we have of our contract and environmental releases, about 8,700 acre feet per year, based on that amount, we had about a 98.5% reliability for the project based on the inflow and based on the statistical and the actual data that was done by Montgomery Watson in 1984. So there's a pretty high probability. I guess the best I can do is I will give you at the next meeting a summary of what the recent decade or whatever it was of releases were. We are trying to maintain a tight balance between how much we release for the groundwater recharge and what we're releasing for agriculture operations, and to keep the contract releases tight also, because I think last year actually we were over by several couple hundred acre feet on what our contract deliveries were. So we're kind of looking at that. So I can bring that to you if that would be helpful. Anything more than that, I guess I need to understand what you'd like me to do.
Well, I think it goes to the broader issue, like you're saying, about the HCP and where we're going to wind up with on that model, and then complicated by other factors of the pipeline capacity and things of that nature. So perhaps we can get back to the tack with some of this and shoot around there to be more detailed on the engineering part of it.
As I recall, Mr. Benedict, we were going to try to get Mr. Ogren to the next TAC meeting. Is that still on the agenda or not?
Mr.
Ogren?
Paul? Yes, I'm working on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, do any other committee members have questions on the ops report?
Well, I don't know that I completely understand where we are total year date. The year changed changed, and so we're starting over. I mean, the last report that we had, we were some 4,700 acre feet year to date in March. Okay, and our our required downstream lease release was only 4,200 acre feet by agreement, and we've had already exceeded in March the downstream release or 3 million gallons per day down the creek, or 4 million is ludicrous. And to continue to do that without us telling the Board of Supervisors that this is not a very good idea, I'm concerned. I'm concerned that we're not doing anything, and I don't know whether we need to agendize this and so that we can all talk about it. I thought it was going to be agendized this meeting, but I see that it's not. And so operationally, it concerns me that we're trying to get trout or steelhead up a 3.5 to 4 mile creek that they can't get above the dam because there is no ladders, and you can't really fish the area. And as was brought up before, John tells us that the creek always went dry in the summertime, and here we're feeding it, trying to get steelhead to come up there, and it's ridiculous. And I think we need as an organization to agendize this thing so that we can openly discuss it. I mean, since we're under a Brown Act regulation, we can't talk to one another unless we do it here. And it needs to be presented in public form. I thought the TAC was going to get that on our agenda tonight, and it's not here. And so I'm a little disappointed. And I just want to see some action, because I think it needs to really be addressed, and we need to inform the Board of Supervisors that this continues to be a ridiculous situation.
Mr. Myers?
I just would like to be updated myself on the status of the HCP. I'm new to this world, and I heard it last month, but I'd like to hear again about where we are, where it's going, and what the steps are, and when we're going to have, hopefully, a completion. So could you give us just a short summary of that, Mr. Bending?
I can do that if Mr. Gehring would like to sort of jump ahead in the agenda.
Oh,
that is an agenda item.
Okay, pardon me, then. I should look ahead. Thank you.
If I may, questions is, yes, we are certainly aware of what we're doing. The problem and the reason why we're doing it is because we have a federal requirement to do that in order to comply with the Endangered Species Act. And if we don't do that, somebody can get put in jail and we would have fines if fish die. Of course, we can't predict if fish will die or not, but we do not have an incidental take permit or a permit to harass or endanger or to obviously kill the steelhead trout or the red-legged frogs, which are also impacted by what we do as far as operations go. And the summary that was in the last packet from 2 months ago did indicate why we were releasing 3 to 5 million gallons per day, based on a meeting that our staff had with federal agencies and what they basically are requiring us to do, which is to maintain those releases. So that's the reason why we are aware of it. We have a responsibility to let water out of the dam. We are working to try to maintain a minimum amount of releases, but the releases, of course, do also replenish the watershed, the groundwater, underground aquifer, which the agencies can pump water out of also in use. So how much of it is, I don't want to say wasted, but we're aware of right now that most of that water is in the ground and it's not going down the creek, because the creek is dry, virtually dry at 22nd Street. Why it's dry, we don't know. We don't know. We don't have that many gauges to know which farmers are pumping how much and what the impact of that is at 22nd Street. But we do monitor it, and we are under a federal mandate to maintain those releases. Just one other comment. Mr. Herring mentioned the March report includes the total year-to-date of releases, again, under line 15, and that was 4,700 acre-feet. That's what we released last year, the I guess I'll call it the water year, the Lopez water year. And you, of course, compare that 4,700 to the 4,200, which is the maximum, quote, the maximum release that's in the contracts with the agency. So we did release 500 acre-feet more last year for environmental purposes than, quote, the minimum, and that was because of the endangered species and because
April, May, and June. And
I can't make a prediction, but I guess my prediction, if I had to make one, would be that I was looking at the release schedule for last year, and the first 2 weeks in July last year, we were releasing 6 million gallons per day. Until Monday, we're releasing 3.5 million gallons per day.
Okay, and then so now it's 4. I mean, today,
we increased
4 million
to 4
gallons a day.
That's correct.
Just
well,
as a Just as a matter of clarification on that subject, it's my recollection that we changed the water year to go from April 30th to March 1st so that we would know how much water we had left at the end of the rainfall.
The rain season.
Yes. Yeah, so, okay. And at that point, we could make a logical determination on how much surplus to declare. So that'll tell you how far back that goes. Because we haven't declared surplus in at least 10 years.
That's been, what, 15 or 20 years ago?
Yeah. So do you have any other comments, Mr. Inman?
No, that's the extent. I would like to be kept up to date on where we are each month so we could see through this drought period what kind of situation we're facing. I mean, it seems to me that I can't see citizens going without potable drinking water when it's going down the creek. Okay, I can't do that.
Yeah, Ted, it may be going down to the creek, but it's not going out into the ocean.
That's right.
It's dry from the Fruit Strand past the 22nd Street Bridge. As I looked at
it. So it's being used either seeping into the groundwater or being used by the farmers.
Well, most of it's going in the ground.
Which is another...
Because very, very little water is pumped out of the creek for agriculture purposes. It's all
okay, well, I hope not, because I raised that issue once before here.
And, there's two or three places above the bus barn where there is no well water in there, and there's a couple of spots where they do pump out of the creek. But that's not the major project. Okay. All these trees that we got, they won't cut the willows down. There's a bigger.
Well, it may well be, and maybe that's the thing. That's the thing we have to do.
In fact, they're working on the willows right now, but I don't know how many they're going to take out.
Okay.
Sure. Well, Mr. Reynolds, do you have comments on this site as to when we're going to stop operating at 500 acre feet a year over safe yield? And I think we've got to make some decisions at some point as to whether we're going to change the amount that we release downstream, or we're going to change the amount we take in terms of entitlement, or just how we're going to handle that, or we're going to accept the fact that we're operating in a much more risky mode than we were when the project was originally constructed. So with that in mind, I do think we need to agendize this for the next Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting for an extended discussion. And I really think that we need to get Mr. Ogren at the TAC meeting before that so that we can find out exactly what the county's position is. Anybody else? Did that raise any other questions on anybody's part?
No, I've had my say. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I would agree with that, Mr. Chairman, but... You know, I think one thing that we need to realize is that the reason why we're operating and letting more water downstream is because no one wants to take on the federal authorities as far as the fish are concerned. And,
but Mr. Reynolds,
until we do that, well, then what are we going to do?
The problem with what you've mentioned, Mr. Reynolds, is I'm not sure at all that the councils of the cities are aware that we're doing this, or the Board of Supervisors. So when you say no one's willing to take them on, I'm not sure that's true. I'm thinking that maybe the councils and or boards are going to take them on if they know what we're up against.
When I've been here as long as you have, and that's always been the roadblock we've had. Well, everybody says, the fish and game.
So. Right.
I think in one sense it's not so obvious as to what we're doing. And that maybe goes to Jim's comment here that boards and the councils aren't really aware of the releases that we're making and how that might impact the long-term reliability of their municipal supplies. And we all know the implications of what Dean has warned us about with the Endangered Species Act and so forth, but at the same time, I think we have a balancing act to look at here, and that is to make it better known and more educated as to what we're doing on the releases from the dam. And I think we can do that through discussions with the TAC and with Mr. Ogren and others, and to use some graphics displays as to where we've been in terms of our safe yield and how far above that we are, so that we can get a feel for really the historical trend on this and where we might be going in the future with the dam at, what, 55% now?
Yes.
And whatnot for the drought deal. So, you know, AG's aware of it now. Whether that means anything or not, I don't know.
I have a thought. I have a question, maybe a comment. Mr. Gehring is saying we ought to make sure our agencies know about this water problem. And I'm asking the question, assume we can get that information out to our agencies, they understand it and agree with what our recommendations are or not. How do we form up these various agencies to get together to go on one cohesive front? Do we do something similar to the slow cog of council of governments and have a slow cog council of water users or some such thing, and to get a war chest so we can hire a council to bring lawsuits if we need to? We maybe ought to start thinking about that if it comes to what I think Mr. Ronald was saying. Nobody brings these federal government to task because it's expensive and uncertain and penalties are imposed. But if we're divided, we're going to be conquered if we're going to try to take the federal government head on. So I think we need to be thinking about and moving in the direction of some kind of cohesive force that we can put together. I don't quite know how that would work. But if anybody has any thoughts, they ought to maybe bring it to the next meeting and discuss it. So anyway, if we're going to go that direction, we need to have an exit strategy is what I'm saying, basically.
I just don't think that we as a committee or advisory board should sit here and let, you know, they are going to come down and get us, okay? I mean, without making the public know exactly what the situation is and making the Board of Supervisors, whose final responsibility is to make this decision as to what we do, and letting them know. And so, you know, I think maybe if we have this ability to put it on the agenda and discuss it, it will be noticed, and anybody can come and talk about it. We can talk openly about what we think ought to have happen, and maybe we can come up with some kind of a statement that we send to the press. I just can't sit here and let this condition continue to exist as a responsible person on this advisory board. It just doesn't seem right.
We're doing and the policies and the responses that we're doing with him and attack at that time, and get his take on what he would or will or won't support as far as making changes to, or what his suggestion might be, and then we could discuss that at the next advisory committee meeting, whether you wish to take a recommendation to the County Board of Supervisors, either from your agency or as an advisory committee, to distribute that or make that better known. Because the district is attempting to operate it within a balance of environmental releases, contract releases, availability, et cetera. We're not doing it to waste water, certainly. But that would be an important input that we'd want to have from him, because he is trying to balance out the agriculture releases. I have talked to him specifically about that, and the farmers don't get, whenever they call, we don't just jump and crank up the water releases for them, but we're again trying to walk a fine line between when do they actually need the releases, when do they need more, how much more, how long do we leave it on. They never call us and say, we don't need water anymore because we're not irrigating because it's cold. And that's something that's a discussion we need to have with them also. And as you see on the agenda, unfortunately, I've had to table that to get some of these other things, continue to have them move. So we haven't lost sight of that. But if I could suggest that as an interim solution, then a discussion at the next advisory committee meeting about where the district is and what we see, and then you could take action based on that.
I have maybe a final thought here. You know, a lot of this is has to be really, truly analyzed from the engineering perspective. And Dean and his staff and the consultants have done a really good job of modeling these things and coming back with different alternatives and so forth. And I think we're reaching some good conclusions with respect to that. Part of it rests with education of ourselves as well as our agencies as to what the ramifications of these things are and the result of the technical studies. But what I'm wondering is, after we maybe go through the TAC meeting and perhaps the next advisory committee meeting, What would you advise on having Mr. Spina come from the Resources Agency and address this committee as to some of the ramifications that they're imposing on the county and the district, and maybe better explain what his position is? If we're educated before that meeting with him, at least we would be more well-informed to ask.
I think you have the right sequence. Learn what we can from our own people and bring the adversary, if you will, the Fish and Game up. Tell us what their position is.
Well, we've been frustrated in the progress that's been made on the HCP for many years now, and maybe it's time that we have the folks here to talk about why they can't get it done.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. Yeah.
I see some consensus on the committee level to follow that course of action. So, to that end, one thing I was wondering about, Mr. Benedict, is you mentioned the Montgomery Watson 1984 Safe Yield Study. And as I recall, you're correct that it set percentages of reliability based upon the amount of water that was being developed by the project. Mm-hmm. And it may well tell us what the reliability that they anticipated would be at the level we're currently releasing. So, could be useful information.
As I just looked at it this afternoon, it was about 98%.
No, I'm talking about when we're operating at 500 acre feet over safe yield.
I'm sorry?
We're operating at 500 acre feet over safe yield currently?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think they analyzed, or if they did analyze that, I don't believe it was 98%.
It was actually based on how much water the total amount of water used from the dam each year. And what I probably should do is show it to you, put it in the next agenda. It's a graph that will show you, pick a number to tell you the reliability on it.
Yeah, but it's only been, the last 4 or 5 years of municipalities have used basically their total entitlement?
But it was based on the total, it was based on a total aggregate number of releases, not any assumptions of what the contract amount was or environmental leases. It was the aggregate total that was used and released from the dam.
Mr. Wallace, are you thinking that we want Mr. Spina at the next advisory committee meeting, or after we?
I think after we have Mr. Ogren here and kind of complete our educational tour of the data and the alternatives, and then maybe have the service here at the following advisory committee meeting, which would be November.
I'll try to tentatively arrange that with Mr. Spina so he has lots of lead time.
That would be about 4 months lead time.
Okay. Any other comments on that subject?
I would just like to ask a question, Mr. Chairman. I'm not familiar. I see the graph that Dean put together with the big that lake since it was built. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. Just under normal. Are we below that at 55% now?
No. Wasn't the lowest story 25,000, basically?
Somewhere around 25. I thought that was in 93, but maybe not.
And that was natural, not without any intent to try to get it down because of the construction that was taking place at the dam.
Yeah, the based on, we're kind of jumping into the H, I'm sorry, into the spillway raise project, but if you look at the data that URS did when they generated the spillway raise scenarios, they did plot from 1969 through 2005 what if scenarios, and between 1992 and 1995 they show that it still did not reach minimum pool. I don't think I've seen any graphs that have ever shown Lopez reaching minimum pool. John, or have you ever? I don't think we've ever experienced that.
About 25,000 was the lowest it ever got.
Okay. Minimum pool being 4,000 acre feet.
25,000. I don't remember exactly, but it's in that neighborhood somewhere.
Well, any other comments on that subject? We'll proceed on that basis. And seeing no one in. Now, Mr. Beaton, did you have any comment?
No.
Mr. Beaton is the only member in the audience for those at home. Okay, so we are at HCP processing status, it sounds like.
Yes. Give you a brief update on the HCP processing. Katie Drexage is not here. She's not involved in the details that we've still been refining some of the scenarios with that we wanted to want to present to Anthony Spina in order to revise the draft HCP to get the full processing beginning. At our last TAC meeting, I shouldn't say the last TAC meeting, I'll go back. The June TAC meeting, we had representatives from the two representatives from Hansen Environmental who did the HCP and from their support fishery service could carry forward that we felt was fair and reasonable. And we have believed that there was one more scenario that was done. We reviewed that the last couple of weeks, and it's virtually the same as the last previous scenario, resulting in about, I'm getting my numbers confused in my head, I think resulted in about 12,600 acre feet remaining in the reservoir based on the approved based on an approved operation HCP after 7 years of drought. It was a simulation based on the 7 years of drought during the 1990s that we had. So that information was used. It was simulated based on starting with the full reservoir. The results of that presentation to the Technical Advisory Committee basically indicated we were trying to get concurrence from the Advisory Committee of what scenario they were comfortable with or what requirements they wanted to have as a result of an acceptable or reasonable scenario. In other words, if the scenario was we need to keep 25,000 acre feet as the minimum after 7 years of drought, that's what we were trying to find out. If it was minimum pool, was that acceptable? That was not acceptable. So what sort of the consensus was is that the TAC wanted to have 2 or 3 years remaining of water, 2 or 3 years of safe yield remaining in the reservoir after a 7 year drought simulation. Okay. So, and that's what we had with the scenario that we currently have that we want to propose to National Marine Fisheries. One more scenario was done with a little bit different guidelines, but it basically resulted in 12,400 acre feet difference. And it's virtually, the only difference is the peak flow releases or the peak flow inflows from Lopez Creek into the reservoir of being a peak of 80 CFS versus 40 CFS. And we're getting to the point where the scenarios are so close that there's no sense in doing them anymore. So we actually had a telephone meeting today, and I directed Chuck Hansen and Curtis Lawler, who are doing the technical documents, to prepare a scenario in a summary, an executive summary, and a technical summary that we will bring to the TAC. A National Marine Fisheries at a point that we believe they'll accept that. The last model was done at the request of the state fish and game representative, who became involved in the process somehow through some discussion. They wanted another scenario, and basically we're not going to deal with that anymore. We're going to focus on National Marine Fisheries and U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and we think that we have that a concurrence from them, probably a 95% concurrence on the issues. And so that's the approach that we're going to take. So I guess the good news is that's going to be finished up next week. We'll bring it to the TAC at the meeting in August. If they're comfortable with that and acceptable with that, we're going to write a letter from the district to National Marine Fisheries saying, here's the proposal we want to use. Please review it. And unless you have some big issues or problems with it, we're going to revise the HCP draft, and that's what we're going with. So we're done doing modeling and scenarios, and we're going to go with what we have because anything else is just a minuscule assumption that doesn't result in any major changes.
Was that 12,600 acre feet over minimum pool?
No, that was total. That's
minimum
total.
Minimum pool is what, 6,000?
4,000.
4,000?
4,000 acre feet. Yeah. And the difference between 12,000 and 4,000, that's obviously 8,000 some odd acre feet, but we do get inflow during the year. So based on 7 years of drought with, quote, drought inflow, we believe, based on 40 years of history, we have 2 to 3 years more before we hit Deadpool storage with the inflow, based on averages in history.
Okay, questions for Mr. Benedix? Mr. Ehring, anything?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Go forward.
I think that jives well with the schedule that we're laying out to come back to ourselves through the TAC next time, and then to this committee here for an update and educational session, and then hopefully in November with the service to come to talk about their acceptance or rejection of the modeling that we've done, and you know, why or why not. So it's good.
Mr. Dean?
Yes, I want to be sure that I understand. We're talking about the second and kind of final submittal. Is that what you called it before?
Excuse me, yes. Unfortunately,
maybe
because the technical...
He's finding this acceptable?
Yes. During our discussions today, both of the consultants told us they thought that Mr. Spina was ready to accept what we were talking about. This last round of remodeling that we did was as a result of some other agency that kind of got his ear. And so we thought, okay, well, we'll do it like one more time. If I'd have known that it was some other agency that didn't have primary responsibility, I said, no, we're not doing it. And we discussed that today and said, you know, sorry, state, you have no jurisdiction here. You make your comments later because everybody has issues.
So you still have some parts of the technical document that have to be rewritten to go along with your modeling?
That's correct.
And when do you expect that to be complete so you could submit it?
I would say probably it would take not more than 6 weeks to change the HCP, and that's, you know, with lead time and whatever. I don't think there's a big change that's going to be involved in that.
And Mr. Spina said about a year after that, did he think to review and get approval for it?
Yes, actually last month was a year from the time that we sent him a letter saying, we're tired of waiting, what can you do? And they promised they would do it in a year. But from their perspective, their year was from when we're finally done with the HCP changing it. So we've still been messing with it for almost a year as far as modeling and getting everybody's comments in so we could get the technical part finished.
So that's 6 weeks from now, which puts us about, September? You're going to get probably...
From when we submit it, and I would anticipate by the end of August, I'm hoping within a couple of weeks after the TAC meeting, the district will submit that letter to him with that information.
So next September, we might...
Yes.
HCP.
Yeah, I would say hopefully by the end of September, maybe October, we will have the revised draft and be submitted.
And it'll be 12 years almost. Is that correct?
Yes.
A new record.
And not even getting close.
Yep.
But we're almost there. I mean, this is big. If you can get buy-in and that last portion of this is big.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, weren't we told that it would be?
Everybody thinks I'm crazy when I throw it out. So
I can tell you it's over 900,000, but less than a million.
Yeah. Like I said a long time ago, anything you do anything with water, you're starting to do it in $500,000 increments, right?
Is that including staff time, Dean?
Yes.
Okay. How many fish did we get up the stream with that?
I'd rather not talk about fish.
Okay, comments? Any other comments? Mr. Ehring?
I'm sorry.
No?
I don't know how to turn this light off when I want it.
Just one final comment, Dean. We talked about Chuck and the other fellow running the model based upon perhaps some introduction of reclaimed water into the stream system. Did that ever
get no.
done, or was that abandoned? Or?
That was abandoned. I spoke with the Public Works Director about that, and he elected to not do that at this time.
Well, we're missing a good bet.
Pardon?
I said I think we're missing a good bet there.
We're going to have to get into it after we get the
yeah.
HCP. After we get the HCP, I think that's
next. We submitted for our wastewater treatment plant, we submitted a application for grant for $9 million.
Yeah. Just to conclude that, I think even though we may not include it in the HCP at this time, I think from the perspective of overall conservation of a resource, that it would be good to know whether it's worth pursuing or not, especially in the regulatory framework or the planning framework for any kind of facilities there in the future. The reason I say that is that Sanitation District is embarking on the completion of its long-range plan, and if there is to be recycling facilities there at the plant, it would be nice to know if there was a good possibility that that could be helped by looking forward to some reclaimed water to augment the supplies out of Lopez.
I don't think we're precluding we're not eliminating that. I guess I would almost compare that to the spillway raise project, where we have an HCP, I'll call it a vehicle, that's maybe hasn't been moving, but at least in form it's a vehicle. And before we change the looks or the horsepower or the capacity of that vehicle, we better make sure we know what we're going to do, because the spillway raise project, just as a reclaim project, may change.
Easy to determine whether that would be a benefit or not. Mm-hmm. If it is a benefit, then that can be another arrow in the quiver later on.
Right.
But at least we would know whether to pursue that at a future time or not. It would seem to be now that they're in the midst of running those models, this would be the time to do it.
Okay.
I don't know, maybe I'm beating a dead horse here, but it sure seems like it would be good to know whether that idea is beneficial for pursuit in the future.
I guess I can give you the perspective of the district, which I would say at this point is that we would see that as being a sanitation district issue. And if you elected to do that, that would be great, but we don't think that the district should be doing that and paying for that at this point. For the out of the zone 3,
it's a water supply project.
Understand?
Yeah. Okay.
More comments? Last call. Okay. Quagga mussel update.
Good news is we continue to not have quagga mussels. I think maybe from Mr. Meyer's perspective, just to kind of refresh everybody, we the county, the Parks Department, has been doing boat inspections for every boat that goes into Lopez and to Santa Margarita. They ratcheted back the degree or the intensity of inspections to ask more about where the boat has been, where it's coming from. And basically because of the observation probably across the U.S. about how much needs to be done to keep boats out or to observe or to investigate that, plus it's been very expensive. We have had several meetings actually with Monterey County regarding Lake Nacimiento, because we believe that's probably the biggest threat to the county. And I guess the short story is Monterey County has requested that we provide them with our program information, what we're doing, the inspections, the postings. Those of you who have been out to Lopez on Lopez Drive have seen a 4-foot by 8-foot sign that's in red and white that you couldn't miss in the dark. It's a giant sign that says no mussels. The sign that mussels get in Lake Nacimiento, of course, San Luis Obispo County would probably sue them and try to get money out of them for contaminating our water supply. That's probably a dead issue, because Monterey County is, by law, as far as we can tell, adhering to what the state law is regarding transferring mussels. A new law is going through that's supposed to protect water purveyors a little bit better regarding mussels, but that law is actually a weakening of the existing law that they're trying to get through. So that's not going to help us in encouraging Monterey County to do anything more. But suffice it to say that we are communicating with them. They have Monterey County has a lot of issues. They're not doing much. We are trying to encourage them, and the City of San Luis Obispo mayor and Supervisor Meacham have met with two of the Monterey County Water Resource Agency supervisors last month to try to go through some of this, and that was the initial meeting that the politicians had, and it wasn't very successful as far as moving them along. But we're trying these baby steps, I guess, if you will, in order to get them more educated and encourage them to do something more so Nacimiento doesn't end up contaminating a boat that comes into Lopez or Santa Margarita. That's my summary, Mr.
Okay. Thank you for that. I guess we'll start over at Mrs. Dean. Any questions on your end, Ms.
No.
Dean?
Awesome. No, thanks.
No.
No? All right. You know, I'm not actually satisfied with the way we left the issue that Mr. Wallace brought up regarding the reclamation. Let me ask you this, just to step back for a second. Did, in your decision-making process, that it wasn't appropriate to investigate that, was there any thought to asking Hansen and or Lawler what it would cost to make that rough analysis?
I believe we talked about it after the TAC meeting a couple of months ago, just informally. We didn't think it would be a lot. In other words, not $15,000. But the cost wasn't really a discussion issue when I discussed it with Mr. Ogren. It was more a concept issue. And if you'd like, I mean, if Mr. Ogren's going to be at the TAC, we'll just have an item on the TAC when we talk about it next time also.
Let's add that to the TAC.
The Sanitation District also has some of the same representation. So our agencies are very interested in that as well. So I think it's appropriate to kind of review to a point of logical conclusion.
Okay.
Okay. Since I brought it up, anything else on that subject?
Thank you.
All right. It looks like we are at a plant upgrade completion issues. Mr. Benedict.
Yes, just a brief summary of where we are on the plant upgrade, and that's our contract with Black & Veatch, who did the design, and the Paul Corporation that furnished the membrane equipment. I have a summary nearly finished regarding what we consider to be liabilities of Black & Veatch for design omissions and errors that have cost the district money. And at this point, real costs for replacement of pumps, facilities, et cetera, are in the range of about $140,000. There are a couple of issues beyond that which are a little bit more nebulous that maybe be $100,000 and $150,000. I don't know if we're going to even pursue that because it's like, should the wet well have been designed larger, and how do we summarize, how do we put a number to that if we need to? We've been operating the plant for over 2 years now. We're getting better at it. It is running pretty efficiently. It produces very good quality water. So we're not there yet, but I will be dealing with the Public Works Director and some recommendations and turning that over to him to negotiate that in the next, hopefully in the next 2 months. The Paul Corporation contract, we haven't paid Paul Corporation about $350,000 of their about $2 million contract because we don't have the appropriate warranty documentation yet, which is a requirement for payment. And we have some issues regarding corrosion of the piping, a portion of which they have agreed to replace and a portion of which they said was fine. We had a subsequent review done of that piping by Kennedy Jenks, and their recommendation was you need to go back to Paul and have them reconsider their statement, there's no other corrosion in the piping because there's pictures that show corrosion in that piping. So we're in the process of working it out with Paul, and I intend on continuing. The good thing, we're keeping the contract issues separate from the operational issues. We have a good relationship with them. We're trying to maintain that. We are having Black & Veatch review the performance report data where there's some inconsistencies with respect to perspective on energy usage and chemical usage. Black & Veatch has reviewed it once. Paul has responded back. Black & Veatch is reviewing it again now, and we hope to resolve that hopefully in the next couple of months with where we need to be to negotiate the actual costs versus the estimated cost on the Paul bid. So we still have that remaining to be done. We are still also considering some changes to the chlorine dioxide, which is our primary disinfectant system. That's a separate contract issue, just an efficiency issue that we're trying to do as far as reliability of the plant. We're working with DuPont on that. They're a subcontractor with us on that. That's got some ways to go. We are operating all right now. We're just trying to make it more stable, and I'm not sure where we're going to end up with that. So I'll bring that back to you later on. And that's the end of my upgrade completion report.
Okay, thank you for that. And questions for Mr. Benedict on that issue?
Dean, the pipe deal, what is it? Because it was faulty pipe, or is it something in the water, or chemical treatment that we're using, or have they laid their finger on what it is?
Our water has a propensity to develop microbial-induced corrosion. It's called MIC. All water doesn't do that. It depends on Mr. Beaton might have to answer why. Certain organics in the water attach to the piping, and they make a blister over the little bubble, and somehow, I don't even know if it's a live virus. I don't know what the thing is, but it makes a bubble and it eats a hole through the pipe. That's what it does. And the latest information I had when I talked to a corrosion engineer said he'd seen one in about 100 of this situation. Paul Corporation told me they've probably had, I'm guessing, 10 in 100. So why they didn't know or wouldn't know, I don't know. All I know, now they use HDPE plastic pipe. They don't use stainless steel tubing. So that's their new standard.
Ms. Dean, all right. Seeing no others, nothing from Mr. Beaton. He didn't step forward to try to explain that.
Looked like it was going to, but I got a second.
Yeah, but he didn't, so we'll have to do without him. All right, sludge bed rehabilitation project.
Yes, Mr. Gehring. As you know, we have proposed and are working on a project to basically double the capacity of our sludge beds because of the operation of the plant, our ability to dry those out quicker, and to have enough capacity to get rid of excess water or water that hasn't been completely treated. And we have received a 50% submittal on the sludge bed project, and we have reviewed that and sent comments back to Kennedy Jenks, who's doing that for us. And we anticipate that within a couple of months we will have a 80% submittal for review and the specifications also. I will remind myself that we had a discussion regarding this. I don't actually know if I think it was at the TAC committee that the TAC was recommending that instead of us doing this with our local roads forces, our internal public works forces, because it's a large earthwork project, that we do it by contract because there are good bids coming out this time. So I will discuss that and we'll evaluate with our staff and let you know what we intend on doing as far as that goes. But I'll bring your recommendations to Mr. Ogren and the deputy director regarding that issue.
Okay, questions for Mr. Benedict on that issue. Am I hearing, Mr. Benedict, that you may decide to use county road crews anyway?
No. Okay. It sort of came out that way. That's not what I meant.
All right.
But I don't get to decide that. So I will take your recommendations. I mean, we've all seen good prices coming out right now. And we need to probably make that decision before we finish, because the completed plans and specs obviously would be different if they were going out to full bid than if we were doing it with a concrete sub and our road crews. So I think there will be a reasonable resolution of that.
Okay, thank you for that. Anybody else? Any other issues? All right, moving on to CO2 acid suppression project.
Yes, we had $600,000, if I remember correctly. And we haven't budgeted all of that. But in reviewing that with the Public Works Director, he has requested that we look into a design build scenario for that project. We are reviewing what the requirements and parameters are to do a design build for this. And so we're in the process of doing that right now. It's a very limited capability of the design build process in a water treatment scenario. There's a lot of design build legislation for wastewater and other type of non-potable water systems. I don't know why, but that's what the legislation shows. There's like six ways to do design build in the state. There's only one way that we see we can do it in this specific project. So I have to discuss that further with the Public Works Director before we move on, because I don't have approval right now to continue to do that design. So that's the status. And I should get an answer on that hopefully next week when I review some of these things with the director.
Questions? Mr. Ehring?
No.
Nobody's stepping forward.
Good report.
So, Mr. Benedicts, how do you see the decision-making process moving forward on whether to finish the plans or decide to go to design build? Do you expect to take that back to TAC, or how is that?
We haven't started the plans yet for that. We have a proposal from Kennedy Jenks to do the construction documents, and we have a justification that will show that the investment in money will get us some good product back to do this, and it's not expensive to operate. The Public Works Director will, if he wants me to pursue design build further in this one narrow channel that I have to do, we will do that. I'm trying to convince him that we shouldn't do that in order to get it done. We just need to get it done. But again, I don't get to make that decision. I can't say what's going to happen. He's aware of the need for us to continue to do this, and he's aware of the urgency of it. I just have not been able to get a disapproval of his previous direction to do a design-build project. I was to do research on it, and I've done that in the first part of August. Right. So I can have that included. I can have some Paavo Ogren issues that we can ask him questions about.
I'll be happy to relate a couple of projects to him.
Okay. Are they design build or otherwise?
They are.
Okay, that would be wonderful, I think. Okay.
Any other comments on that issue? Okay, so moving on to Spillway Raise project update.
Yes, I included in your bid package a agenda for a meeting that I had with Division of Dam Safety last month. I know that's probably kind of weird to include an agenda for a meeting, but again, in the interest of not spending any more money than we need to do things, I want to just give you a kind of a verbal summary of what the Division of Dam Safety said to me in response to pointed questions to them regarding if we were to initiate a spillway raise project. I think the biggest concern that the advisory committees both had was how much peripheral work is there beyond putting the spillway, operable spillway system in. And basically that relates to if we put a 3-foot high spillway raise in, do we have to raise the whole dam 3 feet? I will tell you that their staff was extremely helpful. They had two people there that actually worked on the Lopez remediation project that knew what was done to the spillway. One of the remediation project components was to do repairs to the spillway, which were necessary. And some of you probably know that. I didn't even know that until I started looking into it. There was quite a few spillway repair issues that were done, replacing concrete and some backfill and some grouting to stabilize the spillway area because of some erosion. And they had people who were extremely familiar with that. To get to the answers that they gave me, basically, in response to what would be required in order for them to process an application, there's two primary things that they need to have. They need to have a completed environmental document, a certified environmental document, and they need to have a time and costs. We didn't get into specifics about how long that would be, other than it appeared to me that with those two items, we could apply to them with a formal application, but that would include a preliminary engineering analysis, which is basically a stability analysis of the dam. They indicated to me that the seismic retrofit was a retrofit to stabilize the downstream portion of the dam, if you will. I guess there's two scenarios for dam failures. Basically, the land, the supporting structure of the dam slides sort of like a Ferris wheel, but it slides sort of in a slumps in the downstream face of the dam is one way that a dam will fail, and the other way is that the upstream face or the upstream dam portion will also slide or settle. And the seismic retrofit stabilized the downstream portion of the dam. It didn't and wasn't intended to stabilize the upstream portion because it was unnecessary. And I describe that because when I asked them, well, if we raise the dam 2 feet, if we raise the spillway 2 feet or 3 feet or 4 feet or 5 feet, what's the impact? Well, the higher I went, the more frowning I got from the four staff members that I saw. We have 13 feet of spillway freeboard, if you will, from the base of the spillway to the top of the dam. We have 13 feet. And they explained to me that 13 feet is not just an unlucky or lucky or nominal number. It's a specific number that's based on settlement in a certain magnitude earthquake. And that 13 feet is there to provide some settlement without the dam overtopping and failing. So I guess I'll tell you what I perceived as they said, I asked them, well, what about 5 feet? And the preliminary information I got was 5 feet is not going to look really good. You take 5 feet away, you're going to only leave 8 feet of freeboard, and that's 5/13 is what, I don't know, 40%, 35%. And that's going to cause them some problems. Now, they're going to do an in dam for that type of seismic resistance. So that's about the best that they could tell me in regards to, do we just flat have to raise the entire dam 3 feet if we want to raise it, raise a spillway or put an operable spillway? And they said no. But they will investigate that and look at it, and that will be investigated when, in response to us submitting an application and providing them with preliminary engineering for seismic stability, which they will do a peer review of and approve. So I guess my sense of it would be, if we proceeded with this, we should probably initially look at how high we could put a spillway in and maintain stability with the existing structure, and that would probably be our proposal. Because I imagine anybody who would do such an analysis would know what DSOD does and how they evaluate it, and they ought to be pretty compatible. They had some issues about internal drainage and abutments, but basically they are all related to the seismic stability of the dam when we increase the water height. I believe they indicated to me that the way they assess the dam is that the height of the water at the full spillway design is where they assess the seismic incident or event. But they don't do a lot of other redundant things, because you can imagine all kinds of things that they could pile up on top of each other that would happen. They don't do a 100-year flood in an earthquake when the dam's full. They don't do that. But they're conservative, but I think they're very helpful. They seem to be very responsive, and they were certainly very informed about the Lopez Dam project. So, but there's significant early investigation that has to be done into that. I don't think there are any other issues that I probably need to describe to you. Those were the significant comments I know that the TAC had, and I just want to relay that back to you.
Dean, how many agencies are on board with this spillway raising? Is everybody in favor of it, or we got a couple people are not in favor?
The City of Pismo Beach and the City of Grover Beach has voted to participate. The TAC requested that I send a specific letter to the other agencies regarding getting formal
this approval of the study, not approval of the actual construction. I mean,
that's correct. It would be approval of the next step, which is about $250,000 expenditure.
Yeah, right. Okay.
That's correct.
Mr. Did I hear you say that your interview with the state dam officials or engineers who were there, that they have agreed to do a preliminary analysis about what how high we can go with that upfront cost back to us?
No, they would do that in response to an application
we would file.
That's correct.
I thought that sounded too good, huh?
That's correct.
Mr. Wallace.
Do you have any questions?
It's a little bit of chicken or the egg. Before we commit a lot of money on it, we would like to know what the probability of the state going with the no big deal 2 or 3 feet type of an analysis. Will they do that analysis if we agree to pay their cost to do that?
No, they said they wouldn't.
Oh,
I specifically asked them, because I wondered why they did a parallel analysis or a peer analysis, and they said because they have this their programs that they use to confirm what the engineers provide in the engineers' assessment. Their engineers, they didn't explain to me what the difference was, but they said they have their own internal technical structural analysis that they do. I mean, I was jesting when I said secret, but they do theirs and they do it their way, and then they give input back on the engineers' analysis. So I would assume in response to us asking that question, we'd ask an engineer to give us an analysis telling us how high could we go without having to do surface improvements or upper regimen improvements.
Right. But to make the application, we first got to have the full EIR and the amended water rights permit.
That's correct.
Before we already get any of the cost.
And how old is the EIR?
That's impossible.
How old is the EIR that we did originally? We had to do an EIR at that time.
There is no EIR for the dam.
Oh, there wasn't?
It was built in 19...
Repairs?
No.
Ooh.
Well,
there was an environmental document for the...
For the repairs, there was, but the repairs don't address the increase in height.
Issues? No, probably not.
And we haven't gone...
And they have been involved with the state DSOD before in the analysis of the stability of the dam. It seems logical that we could retain GEI to determine with their contacts with the state, with their past history with the studies, to figure out what this magical height is without having to improve the whole limit of the dam plus the spillways, plus the abutment, excuse me. Is it possible to talk to them about that and ask them what it would cost to augment their previous studies to give us this magic answer before, because we're not going to go for an amended water rights application. We're not going to go for an EIR without knowing whether it's remotely feasible to go 2 or 3 feet.
Right. Yeah, yeah, just one correction. URS did.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. URS. Just for the record.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can certainly do that.
That was the first one. Right?
That was the first one, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, we can certainly do that, John. And there's two components to the next phase of the studying of the for the spillway raise. One is the technical assessment, and the other is other preliminary environmental issues associated with that. We can get that from them. I wasn't proceeding with this yet because, one, I didn't know if we wanted UR. Well, one problem is I can't do a contract through county procurement from URS because it's over $50,000. We have to do a request for proposal, which is a scenario in itself. And I think we have suggested or will be suggesting to the agencies that do want to participate if it goes forward that one of the agencies be a lead agency instead of the district. And City of Pismo Beach, when they approved going with the next step, a feasibility analysis, did offer, I guess is the best way to say it, to go ahead and be that lead agency. Because if the City of Pismo wants to just hire URS, they can do it, that's fine. The district can't do that. We have to go through an RFP process to get a proposal.
Well, just looking for perhaps a way to get this answer at a fairly minimal cost before we would go into the rest of the environmental analysis that URS is suggesting that would be $50,000 or more, and to perhaps even ask the state what firms are qualified, favorable, then we can determine what the safe yield of that is, and then all the other costs are going ahead with all the other studies.
I think, again, the district's position is we want to make sure we know who's participating, and because it's a Class 3 project, meaning it's within the definition of everybody's agency's contracts, that it's only paid for by the benefiting agencies, that those benefiting agencies should pay the cost for that so it's not distributed to the non-participating agencies. And this is all with the assumption, I don't want to speak for Oceano, but kind of the assumption Oceano would not participate. So there is one significant, you know, agency left out of that. But that's part of the reason. We want to be sensitive to not having Oceano pay for something if they don't want to.
So, Dean, did that letter actually go out, or are you still framing
it? No, it hasn't gone out yet. I actually finished it yesterday and hope to get it out the next couple of days.
And you're going to reference some costs in the letter?
Yes. Actually, what I'm going to do is in January of this year, when we had our first advisory committee meeting, there was a summary in there of the spillway raise project. I will include that and references to that in the letter and try to, again, summarize it so that you don't have to duke through a bunch of information. So Oceano and Aurora Grande and anybody in CSA 12 that wants to can find bunches of information on the internet, and the significant information is there for them to make a decision on.
Good.
All right. Anything else on that subject? Anybody else? No? All right. Moving on to plant efficiency assessment review. Mr. Benedict.
Yes. In your package, attachment 6-1, for those of you who may not be aware of it or may have forgotten or wish you could forget, there are three sub-teams that have rosters listed, and this is what we're attempting to do here is have the people with the most expertise regarding capabilities and operations and issues of the plant have a subcommittee and look at the efficiency, how we're operating, what the costs are, so that we can make some assessments and judgments and maybe some changes and things that would maximize the efficiency and minimize the cost. Who are on these committees, set up a meeting time, and we'll start into this and get this going. We want to have this done by the end of the calendar year. So we've had a preliminary meeting with all the participants who were available already, sort of discussed what we're intending to do, how we're going to do it, and so we need to just implement it. And I've got draft agendas prepared.
All right. Any questions, comments? No. Seeing none, I guess we're off to Assembly Bill 8. What's that about, Mr. Benedict?
There's a typo on your agenda. It's Assembly Bill 80.
80.
Apologize for that. That's a state assembly bill that was instigated because Lake Nacimiento wishes to or is planned to take water directly from the Body Contact Lake and put it directly into the Paso Robles membrane treatment plant that is yet to be approved by the voters. And there's legislation that doesn't allow direct body contact water to be used except for specific reservoirs that have specific legislation allowing that, because in the past, the water treatment processes, and John Beaton may have to help me here, but the treatment processes have not treated the virus and bacteria to the extent that we do today with membrane treatment systems. So the legislation that started to provide that capability for the Nacimiento water system and for City of Paso Robles, knowing the staff that is doing that, knew that the Lopez system has a capability to treat water directly from Lopez right into the water treatment plant. But we can't do that because the legislation doesn't allow it. We have a membrane plant that's updated now that can treat that, the Giardia and the virus, because of the capability of our plant. So we included the Lopez project in with the Nacimiento project legislation to make that change. There was some person, lobbyist or something, that on the 2nd of July got a hold of the legislation and had all kinds of problems with justification of without the Lopez project, meaning we would have no capability to do that now legally. Congressman Blakely's, or Assemblyman Blakely's staff, who've been working with, has said it was a sort of a temporary setback that happened. They had to pull it out in order to keep the whole bill from dying, and he's going to be reinitiating Lopez back into it when he figures out why this particular issue has come up with this particular person. So right now, Lopez has got pulled out of that. We intend on continuing to pursue getting it back in as it was, and I don't think there's anything going to be a rush on that. We just need to make sure that we're working with the Assemblyman staff to incorporate it back in or find out why it can't be. So that's the status on that.
So is Blakely carrying the bill, or why is he involved? Is Blakely carrying that bill? Who's carrying the bill?
Assemblyman Blakely is carrying the bill.
Oh, okay, so yes. He's the right man to go to. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm just saying he's the right person to be talking to. I'm just thinking ahead of myself.
Yes, yes. We're going to bring that up with the Public Works Director at our meeting next week to discuss this issue, to see if he wants to refer it up to the board, to see if Mr. Asajian or somewhere might want to start being in contact and handle it politically if we think we're running into some other bigger problems. We really don't know why this lobbyist, for whatever reason, is made a stink about it. We sent him a lot of information about it. I think one of the reasons it got pulled out, probably because there is no EIR. They wanted an EIR for doing this, for adding this capability, and it's not applicable. So we're trying to determine what the problem is so we can address it. We don't know that yet.
Any other questions? No? 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 Okay. Any committee member comments? We'll start with Mr. Earing.
I have none. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Myers.
I'm just glad to hear we're working on the problem. It sounds like it's a solution that needs a solution, so keep going.
Mr. Reynolds?
I have one, Mr. Chairman. Yeah. Dean, what is the status of the Davis-Grunsky Bond Act as far as the recreation facility is concerned? We should be about to the end of it.
I believe that expired on June 30th. I think right now the Board of Supervisors, as the district representatives, they could close that down if they wanted to. There's no legal responsibility anymore to have it, nor is Zone 3 responsible financially for operating that in any shape or form any longer. Until the Davis-Grunsky contract expired, the district was still financially responsible to make sure that that recreation facility continued to operate regardless of if it made money or not. That ended on June 30th.
Okay, so say it falls on its face, then they're going to, what's going to happen then?
The County Parks Department would have to pay for it.
Any revenue left over, they would have first dibs on it?
That's correct. but that hasn't been a problem.
Yeah.
Or a benefit.
It was a few years ago.
I don't think, I was told by our department financial officer that Zone 3 never paid anything for the recreational facility, specifically for the camping and the operation of that. You know, there's peripheral ramifications of other things, but it was never money taken from Zone 3 operations to operate the recreation facility per se.
I would say that's correct.
All right, Mr. Wallace?
Oh, just looking back over many years of county staff and support they've been giving to this committee, I appreciate Dean's thoroughness in his responses. That's well appreciated. Thank you.
Did you notice that Hal Wilkinson passed away?
Oh, really? I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hal was the county staff responsible for this committee 30 years ago.
Who was it, Mr. Gehring?
Hal Wilkinson. He was in your position when I first came on the committee.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was a good guy. And too bad.
He
was probably
80s.
80, in his 80s.
Yeah,
yeah.
Mid-80s, as I recall. Mrs. Dean, anything?
Nothing.
No? Okay. It looks like the next regular meeting will be September 17th, 2009, at the Grover Beach City Council Chambers. And unless there is a further comment, last call for further comments, we are adjourned.